Improving the economy, creating jobs, reducing the deficit, reforming immigration and gun laws, universal preschool, ending the war in Afghanistan. Some of the priorities laid out last night by President Obama in his State of the Union address. We'll talk about the president's plan and the Republican response during this edition of our Big Question. And we'll ask you to tell us which direction is better for the nation. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 8 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Wednesday, February 13th. Join in with your reactions to the State of the Union and the plan set forth at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk at WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our guests are Lenny McAllister, author and conservative commentator. His books include Diary of a Mad Black PYC Proud Young Conservative and Spoken Thoughts from an Amalgamated Advocate in Today's America. Good morning.
Good morning.
And also with us is Basil Smichel, Jr., political consultant, political analyst, president and founder of the Basil Smichel Associates. He is also an adjunct professor at Columbia University School of International Public Affairs. Good morning.
Good morning to you.
Well, Basil, first, what did you think of the State of the Union address last night?
It's a hard left turn by the president. It's a very progressive. It was a very progressive speech that I think certainly elaborated on similar tones that he struck during the inaugural. And as progressive as it was also quite ambitious because he laid out essentially a laundry list of some progressive agenda items, policies that have been sort of on the back burner during his first term. So although I think the far left of the party, which had been very critical of him in the first 4 years, may have seen a lot that they liked or heard a lot that they liked last night, what remains to be seen is how much of it will actually really get done.
Yeah, we can talk about some of that. But Lenny, did you think the president took a hard left turn in that speech?
Yes, the president did take a hard left turn. And, number one, we have to look at how much this is going to cost. And number two, is it really the role of the federal government to do some of these things? This is not the first time that the president, for example, has talked about the values of good preschools when, in fact, we lose our kids from an academic standpoint in second and third grade. That's where we start falling off. There, I think that some of the focus, once again, from a progressive point of view, is on the wrong things. I think that when we look at what the president is putting forward and the type of direction he's trying to give, it's all well-intended, but it's not the role of the federal government, particularly a federal government that has a $16 trillion debt in climbing. This is something that, once again, I think is going to distract us and not unite us as a country.
Mm-hmm. Well, Basil, what about that? It's not the role of the government to do that.
I do understand those arguments. I mean, but the reality is that, since FDR, our government has expanded quite significantly. I mean, we have, as we've seen the population become more diverse and more complex. I mean, even if you kind of take it in a little smaller and just focus even on some of the urban areas in this country, you realize that our population is extraordinarily diverse and complex, and the things that need to get addressed are not going to be done solely by the private sector and not solely by nonprofits. And I think government does have a role in this, in taking on some of these programs. I mean, even the conversation specifically about preschool, I mean, he can talk about preschool, but Head Start programs have been cut very significantly over the years. So I'm not so sure that I think there is an argument that can be made that we have a government that does a lot of spending, but a lot also has been cut over the years. And if we're going to address these problems of the impact of globalization, if we're going to tackle the problems that are where our economy is not growing as quickly as it should, then I think government does need to step in to at a point.
Mm-hmm. And Lenny, what about the president said that there's, you know, there's more to improving the economy than deficit reduction?
Well, there is, and it needs to be a two-prong approach. We need to talk about cutting spending, but we also have to talk about increasing revenues, but increasing revenues in a way where more people are paying taxes, not just some people are paying more taxes. And we didn't really hear that much about that from this president. And surprising to me and disappointing to me is he brought up Governor Romney once again. We heard this in the inauguration speech. This president is still campaigning for the presidency. It is time for this president to start leading as a statesman and stop pointing the finger at the other side. This president, and he's been doing this basically since 2007 when he first announced that he was going to run for the presidency, he looks for a boogeyman and he pokes his finger at him any chance he gets. And this was another example last night, once again, where he used the bully pulpit of the presidency to find the appropriate boogeyman and point a finger at it. And we have to get away from this. I think that that sets the tone for gridlock in Washington. And let's just be fair. When we're looking at people continuously dropping out of the workforce, and you want to talk about the national deficit, if you're not talking a tone that's going to unite people, get people on the same page, and encourage people to get back to work, and encourage employers to hire, it doesn't matter what we talk about, because this debt's going to continue to increase, and we're not going to have enough people to pay into the systems that we need to be self-sufficient when it comes to the entitlement programs, and get more people to be self-sufficient when it comes to the household items that they need to take care of every day. We're going to continue to see more Americans slipping into poverty, and we're going to continue to be weakened as a country.
Mm-hmm. Quit taxing the boogeyman.
I didn't get that at all from his tone. I mean, and I can be, I'm a Democrat and I support the president, but I can be fairly objective, and I didn't hear a tone where he was particularly antagonistic towards Republicans. He certainly did bring up Governor Romney to say that he agreed with him on one or two items, but I think, and going back to this issue of these job creators and job growers, I mean, we've been talking about that for years, but it's been clear that the job growers have been holding back their money. They've been reluctant to do a tremendous amount of spending because they've been concerned about the economy. But here's the thing. You know, we have the stock market at this point rebounding up over 14,000 points and potentially at a point where we're actually at a level that's before 2007, 2008 levels. So if we're looking at the opportunity that job growers, job creators have to actually provide jobs, I haven't seen a better time to do it than right now. So we'll see if it actually happens.
We are talking with two guests about last night's State of the Union address, and we welcome your input too. What did you think about what President Obama had to say last night? Anything you particularly liked or disliked about the speech or the plans that he presented in the speech? And we'll talk some, too, about the Republican response from Senator Marco Rubio. Which direction is the best direction for the state of our union? 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is The Big Question on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Checking the weather forecast for today, it's going to be a mostly sunny, milder day today. We can expect highs in the mid to upper 30s. Looks like we could see some snow developing tonight and a snowy day tomorrow. Highs tomorrow, low to mid 30s. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's coming up on 18 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Wednesday, February 13th. We have plenty more perspectives on President Obama's State of the Union address coming up in our next hour. It's going to be a roundup. We will be talking with an economist, a political scientist, immigration experts, lawmakers, including U.S. Representative Mark Pocan of Madison, a Democrat, and Republican U.S. Senator Ron Johnson, coming up after 8 o'clock, plus more of your comments on the State of the Union. Our big question today is, what is the state of the union? And we welcome your input as we talk with two guests who have different political perspectives. Lenny McAllister, who is an author and conservative commentator, and Basil Smichel, who is a political consultant and political analyst. And let's get in some listener reaction. Dan in Phelps is with us. Hi, Dan.
Good morning, and thank you very much. I would like to say I like the president's speech. It has a lot in it. The problem you're asking whether we're going in the right direction. The direction we should be going in is increased demand. That's what will get the economy going again. If the public sector is not willing or able or bold enough to expand, then it's the government that has to do it. Unfortunately, Mr. Rubio has drunk the Republican Kool-Aid, and no urging is going to make him or Paul Ryan or the rest of the Tea Party people Keynesians. They're Ayn Rand devotees. So therefore, I would like to take this opportunity to remind all of your listeners who feel like I do and that we've got to get going to get the economy going. The names of your representatives are in the front of your phone book. Get it out. Call them. You're going to have to leave them a voicemail message, but let them know you want this done or it won't get done. Remember, the Republicans killed the New Deal in 1937.
Dan, you've got so much to say. I'm sorry to say that we have to get our guests in on this one, too. So thank you very much for your input, Lenny, your reaction to Dan.
Hey, a little bit of a history lesson will show that if you look at what was going on in the 1930s, we didn't come out of that depression just because of all the government spending. In fact, historians and economists look back at the 30s, and there's a strong opinion that some of the spending that FDR did and pushed, while it did some good, may have lengthened the depression. The main thing that brought us out of that depression was a war, and I don't think anybody wants to go to any more wars, not after 9/11, not after Iraq, not after Afghanistan, and all the conflicts that we're seeing overseas. So we can talk about increased spending and Keynesian economics that's going to pull us out of this, but we're in a different situation. We're in $16 trillion worth of debt, which is after two wars in the 21st century, after the Cold War, after World War II, in the military-industrial complex. We're not in the same world as 1930. So if we think that we're just going to continue to spend to get us out of this recession, we can just look at the last 4 years. We passed an over $800 billion stimulus package that has resulted in people jumping out of this workforce to a clip where we haven't seen workforce participation this low since Reagan's early years in the presidency. So the proof that this has worked is just not there. So we need to do something different. And if people are scared to hire the people with all the money, the banks that were bailed out and other big employers, if they will not hire because of the debt and they will not hire because of the spending and the uncertainty when it comes to the regulatory practices and the tax practices and the economy overall, then why would we continue the same exact thing for another 4 years? I mean, pie-in-the-sky promises are great, but if we're not getting tangible results for everyday Americans, it just isn't enough.
So why would we do this, Basil?
Well, listen, I think, and we're stuck a little bit in the 1930s, so I'll go back there for a second. Mm-hmm. We, at that time, and even if government was spending a little more, what we were actually able to do was, we had a stomach for construction and really building our infrastructure. There were probably highways that didn't need to be built at that time that we couldn't do without right now. But we as a country practiced a bit more of collective federalism. We thought more about our future, which I actually don't think most voters and most elected officials have the stomach for today. We're not making investments in infrastructure, which the president talked about last night. We're not thinking too much into the future. We're thinking so much more about the president. David Brooks talked about the president, and David Brooks talked about this a bit in the New York Times op-ed yesterday. We're so focused on the here and now that we're not willing to make these future investments. We don't have the stomach to do the kind of spending that will actually increase employment with that supports our infrastructure and that supports innovation. So I think what we see right now, and we go back and toss this term roadblock in Congress in Washington right now, we're seeing that right now because I don't think many of our elected officials, and some Democrats are responsible for this also, I don't think we have the stomach to make the long-term sacrifices necessary. And I think that's what hurts the economy, and that is what makes businesses shy away from making similar types of long-term investments.
Let me bring another caller into our conversation. Yehuda in Pewaukee. Did I get that right?
That's correct.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. And good morning, and thank you for taking my call. I want to say again, I'm repeated what your guest saying. You know, it seems like the president is continuing to campaign instead of leading. Somebody needs to remind him is the president, and he doesn't representing only the Democrat, he's representing both sides. If Democrat and Republican, rich or poor, middle class, all the other class, he's continuing dividing the country instead of leading this country. And if he's not going to lead the country, he's continuing to get the roadblock that he's getting from different sides.
Yeah, all right. Thanks, Yehuda. Let's get Basil first. Is the president, how do you counter that? He's campaigning and dividing, not leading.
You know, I think it's interesting because it's a comment I've heard quite a few times since his speech last night. But there's one thing that I'd like to raise. If you listen to his speech and, you know, if you watch a number of State of the Union speeches over the years, what I found to be pretty interesting was that not until the end when he talked about gun control, there was a fairly tepid response in the room by both Republicans and Democrats. And to be honest, I think part of that has to do with the fact that we may have a lot of grand plans for what we want to do. So I don't have a problem with him laying out his strategy, laying out these ambitious policy initiatives that he wants to be able to take on. But I think the fact that the response in the room was a little more tepid than I'm used to seeing is because the folks in the room understand how difficult it's going to be to actually get any of this done. They know that they're going into a Congress where there's going to be a lot of roadblock, that people are going to be entrenched at both extremes of the policy spectrum. So I think part of the speech was meant to energize and rally his strongest supporters, but to be honest, I think some of it fell a little flat, and we are going to see a lot more. We're going to see a lot of arguing and a lot of bickering. I don't think that's going to change.
Let me get another call, and Lenny will address Larry in Middleton. Hi, Larry.
Hello. One of your guests has taken the position that much of what President Obama proposed last night is beyond the power of the federal government. I disagree with that. The founders in the preamble to the Constitution stated that they were adopting that document in order to, among other things, promote the general welfare. And furthermore, they provided in famous Article 1, Section 8, for the powers of Congress to include actions for, quote, general welfare of the United States.
Yeah. Well, Larry, I think our guest is saying a smaller government would be better than a bigger government.
Well, no, I disagree with that, too. I think I'm for big government because as business has gotten bigger and more powerful, the only force that can correct the excesses of business, such as we saw in 2008 with financial meltdown, is a big government that unhesitatingly regulates for the general welfare.
All right, so we got to do this for the general welfare, Lenny.
Well, the general welfare is supposed to be protected and provided by the people of the United States. And the one thing that's supposed to be bigger than government and business are supposed to be the people. And what we are leaning towards in a model in this society is allowing government to be unregulated and to be almost worshipped, and to allow business to, in some regards, be worshipped. We have to get back to a point in time where government is small enough for the people to dictate to it its will and have it be representative government. When you have that, then there's a respect for all institutions within the United States to understand that they exist so that the people of the United States can pursue life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness as it's listed in the Declaration of Independence. And anything other than that moves away from what we're supposed to be as a people in these United States. Having a government that's going to bring about a universal vision of preschool when we can't even get on the same page as far as educating our kids around the country when it comes to high school, or getting us competitive again when it comes to STEM sciences or STEM subjects for school and for business, how are we going to do this for preschool? Again, we're at a point where we're talking about more pie-in-the-sky programs that without the tangible results for re-strengthening this nation is nothing more than some idealism that's going to continue to allow us to slide backwards as a nation, as the disparities increase, as the divisiveness increases. That is not good enough for the American people, not in the 21st century, not in a global economy, and not after the first act of this 21st century, where we have been suffering the aftermath of 9/11, two wars, and two recessions.
Basil?
Well, I find it interesting that a lot of the conversation among Republicans and conservatives now have even gone further right of the Republican standard bearer in Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan was a supply sider. I mean, he embraced big business, and he talked about a lot about how the big businesses were going to drive our economy, and government should significantly step out of that, out of mingling with them and interrupting what they do. But it seems like we've gone even further right than that. But so to me, it seems that there is no plan by the extreme right. There is no plan really for how we get our economy back on track. And whether you support the president or not, you have to acknowledge that he has brought unemployment down since he has taken office. The economy has grown. The Dow is back up. So we are making progress. I mean, it's not going to be quick. It's not going to turn around in a positive direction as quickly as it became negative. But it is. It has turned around.
Let me jump in because we have news coming up next, and then we'll continue debating today's big question: what is the State of the Union? I'm Joy Curdine. This is the Ideas Network. Our coverage of President Obama's State of the Union address continues during this edition of our Big Question. And we are asking our guests and you about the State of the Union and whether or not President Obama wants to take the country in the right direction or not. I'm Joy Curdine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is coming up on 7:37 on this Wednesday, February 13th. We welcome your input, your reaction to the State of the Union and the plans put forth by President Obama, or the Republican response from Florida Senator Marco Rubio. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Curdine Show Facebook page. We have with us two guests. Basil Smichel is a political consultant, a political analyst, and Lenny McAllister is an author and conservative commentator. And our next caller is Linda in Monroe. Hello, Linda.
Hello, Joy. Great program. Hello, gentlemen. Now, I listened to both President Obama and Senator Rubio, and I thought President Obama had a lot better solution in solving the deficit and creating jobs. And I believe the State of the Union is better than when he first got elected. And I think an easy way to solve the deficit would be to close all the tax loopholes and raise the tax on the wealthy. And I think this would help the working middle class rather than what the Republicans believe about doing it all through cuts, such as to Social Security and Medicare.
Lenny, you want to respond first?
Well, one, I think that we're not in a free fall that we were in 2008. But if you look at the workforce participation, the unemployment rate is coming down because there are not as many people looking for jobs. So that unemployment number coming down is not the primary indicator as to where we are from an employment standpoint in this country. And I caution people to not just look at the unemployment rate and say things are getting better, because when people stop looking for jobs, or the types of jobs that they get are service industry jobs. If somebody had a job making $20 an hour and now they're making $8 to $9 an hour, that is not good for the American people, and that's what's been going on in this country. So I caution people about that, number one. Number two, just closing the loopholes and just raising taxes on the rich is not going to be enough. We need to make sure that people have an opportunity to create wealth in this country. And when you create wealth, you create opportunities for people that have no access to wealth any other way other than new opportunities coming in, innovation coming in, new small business jobs being created, and career opportunities being created. That's what we need to see. Just closing the loopholes, which would be good, is not going to be enough. And just taxing the rich is not going to be enough. We need more people paying more taxes to make the revenues necessary to get this country back on track.
Basil?
Well, I would say that if you sort of can't have it both ways. If you're saying that the folks that we can't look at unemployment numbers because there are a lot of people that have given up. They've given up because businesses aren't hiring, because they just haven't decided that they're going to make the long-term investment to hire people who are looking for work right now. And I don't think the president believes that it's just about taxing the wealthy, though I do believe that a lot of folks in the Democratic Party believe that the more wealthy among us need to pay more of their fair share. When you have someone like a Phil Mickelson, who's a multimillionaire, and he's saying that he pays 63% of his salary in taxes, and he wants to perhaps give up golf as a result of that. It's, my heart bleeds for him. Like, really, this guy will still have access to the country club. I'm worried about this guy that's making $30,000, the guy that's making $50,000, the person that has to make decisions between paying a bill and buying food. The concern that I have is that we keep talking about whether the fact that we need to make it easier for organizations, for companies to hire people. They clearly are not, and I wonder, go back to a statement I made earlier. I wonder if now that we're starting to see the Dow come up, and hopefully it will start to level out, and we're not, as someone said the other day, we're not in a sprint. We're actually a marathon where we can see continued growth of the Dow, that the companies are feeling a little more confident, and maybe in the next 2 years before midterm elections, we'll be able to see if they actually have started hiring again.
Yeah, I promised that we'd also talk a little bit about Senator Rubio's Republican response. Lenny, do you think he did a good job?
I think he did a pretty good job, aside from the water moment, of course. But I think that what we need to start seeing from Republicans is more of a touchy-touchy, feely-feely type of approach. People need to understand that Republicans are one of them and not some separated partisan group that is part of the country but not really part of the country. I think that Senator Rubio is a step in the right direction, a step in the direction of I am one of you, but some people can relate to the immigrant story, but more people can relate to the poverty. More people can relate to going from working class to middle class, or going from one socioeconomic level to another within a very brief period of time, within one generation. Those are the things that Americans need to see more often. They need to see that from the Republican Party and see solutions that match that in order to give people the confidence to look at our solutions once again and get behind our policies and start making a bipartisan difference, not just what we've been seeing over the last 4 years.
Yeah. Basil?
Yeah, it's funny to me that the guy from Florida didn't have a Gatorade handy, but I actually agree with that. I think that he is and could be a great spokesperson for the future of the party. In addition to the immigrant story, I think the poverty story is very compelling. I also think that as we go forward, as Republicans go forward, they have to find a way, and I've actually been saying this quite a bit lately, they have to find a way to bring back components of the party that they've lost. They need to bring back women. In fact, his vote against the Violence Against Women Act does not help that. I think the way that going forward, I think his leadership with Democrats on immigration reform can be very helpful. And frankly, I do think they need to sort of rein in components of the Tea Party, because as long as the Tea Party in some instances kind of hijacks the message, the moderate Republicans, the more thoughtful ones, in my opinion, will always get tagged with this, with the more extreme members of the Tea Party, and folks, independents and Democrats, are not going to be able to tell them apart. So I think that has to actually be a very significant component of the Republican strategy going forward.
Let's take a call from Pat in Brookfield. Hello, Pat.
Hey, guys. I think one of the problems that we have is what exactly was just expressed by Linda. I'm sure she honestly believes that if we just simply increase taxes on the rich and close loopholes, that our deficit's going to go away and it's going to help the middle class. It's not true. I don't really know what else to say other than any economist or any reasonable person will understand that the math does not add up. And I think the president needs to start selling a hard message in this country that we are all going to have to do a little bit of sacrificing. I mean, raising $67 billion a year by increasing taxes on the rich, it's not going to get us there. And I also want Linda to think about, if you're living in a state that has over a 10% income tax, you know, California's at 13, New York's at 10, even in Wisconsin, you know, let's say you're at that 40% federal tax rate, you're paying another 6.5% payroll taxes federally. Now you're paying another 6.5-7% in Wisconsin on the state income tax. You're paying at 55%. You are only keeping 45% of your money, and that's before property taxes, sales taxes, fees, all of that stuff. Now, I'm not saying that's not the level they should be paying at, but we've got to stop in this country thinking that we can keep taking more money from these folks who are job providers, whether people want to admit that or not. I think they're paying at the level they should. We just increased taxes on them. We need to understand that we're all going to have to sacrifice if we want to get out of this debt and deficit.
Thank you very much, Pat. Basil, you can start this round.
I don't disagree. I do think that taxing the wealthy is part of a strategy. It shouldn't be the only strategy. And I think most Democrats believe that some spending cuts have to occur. It's the where, and it's the where and the how and the how much that is of issue. I think some Democrats do believe that, but I don't want us to get caught in this, well, that's the taxing the wealthy is the only way out of it. And if the president came across that way, I don't even believe that he thinks that that's the only solution. The problem is that it seems to have dominated so much of the conversation and probably so much of his negotiation around this debt ceiling. And he actually, from where he was, he seems to have given in a lot, from that original, for example, $250,000 mark. But I do believe that most Democrats believe that there has to be some spending cuts in there to reduce the deficit.
Yeah. Wasn't Lenny, the president, talking about Medicare reform and some spending cuts, but investment in certain areas, tax code reforms? He wasn't just saying, let's raise taxes.
Well, what we can look towards are his actions after this speech. I think we've seen it more than once from this president where he'll throw a little bit of an olive branch to the Republicans in these joint sessions of Congress or State of the Union addresses. And then when it's time to see what the legislative leadership is going to look like, excuse me, when it gets back to what the legislative leadership is going to look like, it goes right back to the same tone. I mean, I go back to the 2009 speech, the infamous Joe Wilson You Lie speech. He was talking about portability of insurance and some of the Republican ideas for the Affordable Care Act. And then as soon as that speech was over, as soon as we got done focusing on Congressman Wilson's poor choice of timing and words, we went right back to the partisan fighting and this huge divide. I think that President Obama has not done a good enough job of pulling in the Democrats and saying, you have to work with Republicans. This is one country. And one would hope that with him being a lame duck president, not having to run for re-election anymore, despite what one congressman in New York would like to do in regards to getting rid of term limits for presidents, which is insane. We, in fact, need term limits for Congress in addition to the presidency. But with President Obama being in that position, it's time for him to be the bridge builder and have that vision of a united America working together and really talking about the types of restraint that we need in spending as we're increasing revenues and not just by raising taxes. We have yet to hear this president really talk about getting the working class to middle class, not just helping the middle class. We need to grow the middle class by bringing the working class up, not by bringing people that have money that were upper middle class down.
Would the proposal to raise the minimum wage be an item that would do that, Lenny?
No, that's a bad idea. You don't want to just raise minimum wage and then lock people into entry-level jobs. What you want to do is to have the second, third, and fourth jobs behind the entry-level jobs that allow people to have careers, not just jobs. This is a very, very, very bad idea. We need to be focusing more on repatriating the second, third, and fourth level jobs that have gone to India, that have gone to China, that have gone to Indonesia, those tech jobs that we're being told Americans aren't ready to do. We need to get America ready to do those jobs, get our young people ready to do those jobs, because those are the gateway jobs to careers. And so even if you keep minimum wage at $7.25, the goal is to make sure people have some place to go from minimum wage jobs, which were only supposed to be entry-level jobs, and stop thinking of them as career opportunities. If a minimum wage job is a career opportunity, this country is certainly doomed. We'll never get out of the deficit situation we're in, and we're going to continue to slide down to being a mediocre country in the 21st century from a global perspective.
Yeah, a quick react, Basil, on the call to raise the minimum wage as we're almost out of break time.
Sure. I'll just say very quickly, I do think the minimum wage helps, but I do agree with your point that we need to be focused on careers instead of jobs. And the president did talk about some jobs coming back. He talked about Apple last night bringing jobs back into the United States. But it actually goes back to the beginning of our conversation, the beginning and part of the president's speech. If you invest in things like preschool, where you can close the achievement gap early, which is where it needs to happen, you can get young people involved in thinking about careers where that require a lot of innovation, that require some critical thinking, so you can prepare them for careers as opposed to jobs. So the investment has to start early. And I think he laid the foundation for that last night.
Basil Smichel Jr. is a political consultant, political analyst, president and founder of the Basil Smichel Associates. He's also an adjunct professor at Columbia University School of International Public Affairs. Also with us during this edition of Our Big Question, from another perspective, Lenny McAllister, author and conservative commentator. His books include Diary of a Mad Black PYC, Proud Young Conservative, and Spoken Thoughts from an Amalgamated Advocate in Today's America. We are reviewing the plans put forth in last night's State of the Union address. And we're asking you whether or not you think the president has us headed in the right direction or not, and your reactions to what he had to say last night or what Senator Marco Rubio had to say last night. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. It's going to be mostly sunny and mild today with highs in the mid to upper 30s. I'm Joy Cardine. This is The Big Question. Coming up after 8 o'clock, we have plenty of other perspectives on President Obama's State of the Union address coming up after 8 o'clock. A roundup of guests, including more of your calls. Let's take more of your calls right now. Craig in Onalaska is with us. Hello, Craig.
Good morning. It's my opinion that the State of the Union is required by the Constitution that the president give his opinion on what the state is. It's my opinion also that the opposition party does not really have a right or a need to come on afterwards and give their opinion. You know it's going to be totally the opposite, and you know it's going to be sound mostly like sour grapes, and that generally the person who gives the second response does a very poor job. Last night, Rubio looked nervous. I think he wiped his forehead and his mouth area at least three times. He looked odd when he reached for the water. So I'd like to see the parties agree to doing away with the response afterwards. I don't think it does either one any good.
Well, I don't. A quick react to that, Lenny first.
It's never going to happen. although logically that makes sense, the bully pulpit of the presidency is such a huge political resource that neither political party is going to want to say, okay, you get to dominate this evening and we'll leave it be. That's never, never, never going to happen. I mean, it's the same thing with the weekly addresses on Saturday. That, you know, you would think that your president should be able to talk to the American people as the nonpartisan leader of the country. But there's a reason why you have the president that speaks, and then there's a weekly address from the opposing party every week for the same reason, not to give the party that has that bully pulpit the huge political advantage. And that's probably an indication of where we are politically as a nation, where we can't just have leaders. All of our leaders are always politicians, and that's probably a sad thing in America.
You know, we not only had a Republican response last night, the Tea Party Express or Tea Party Patriots asked Rand Paul to also give a response, so we had a third response, too. Let's take another call from Tony in Tomahawk. Hello, Tony.
Hi. The really larger issue that Obama was framing is that he supports demand-side economics rather than supply-side economics. Rather than just speaking in generalities, Obama believes that unless people have more money in their pocket, you really aren't going to create any more jobs. Businesses won't prosper. There's a need for demand. And the supply-side economic position that Rubio took and other Republicans have repeated, 30 years ago it was called voodoo economics by George Bush Sr., and Reagan blew up the budget, George Bush Jr. blew up the budget, and supply-side economics doesn't work. It did not create more jobs.
All right. I'm sorry to cut you short, Tony, but we have only 2 minutes left. So first minute on that, since it was directed, criticizing the Republican stance, Lenny, you go first.
Well, I think that when we look at it, I think President Obama is talking about having more people have money in their pockets, but he's talking about government spending money on so many different things. And he just fought for a tax increase that not only raised the FICA tax on everybody, but raised taxes on those making over $400,000 a year. And he was looking for money to be raised and taxes to be raised on those making more than $250,000 a year. So he's not necessarily looking to put more money in people's pockets. He's looking for more money to go to government, and then the government will decide where the money goes from there. And that is not correct. If you go back to what Reagan actually did do in the 80s, when they cut the capital gains tax, people were paying more taxes, even though the capital gains tax was actually cut. So there are examples of where Republican perspectives in regards to getting increased revenues and rebolstering the economy has actually worked from a conservative standpoint.
Yeah, and Basil, we have just a minute to go.
I think that, yes, I think to some extent the president does talk about the demand side of the graph. And yes, Republicans traditionally, particularly Ronald Reagan, talked about the virtues of the supply side. But I think in the economy that we have right now, and the fact that it is a global economy and that so many businesses have left the United States, it becomes increasingly difficult, more difficult to talk about supply side economics. How are we competing with countries that have that can pay people, significantly lower wages? And in fact, we talked about state taxes before. states are becoming increasingly more competitive against one another. So I think it's appropriate for the president to talk about demand, the demand side of this equation. But frankly, I don't even know if the Republicans really support the supply side in the way that Reagan did. I think they've come so far away from that. That's caused some problems for how we look at this issue.
We'll have to leave it there. I want to thank both of our guests very much for being with us. Basil Smichel and Lenny McAllister. Thanks to Bill Martin, Cynthia Schuster, and Amanda Magnus for producing the hour. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.